Hello, I'm Ken McLeod, Principal Teacher at Unfettered Mind. Our website is an ongoing effort to explain Buddhist practice in a way that is clear and accessible to the Western mind without dumbing it down. If you find these teachings useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to maintain and expand the site. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, the nuts and bolts of the mystery of being.
Okay, so we've just spent some time going through constructing a story about ourselves. So what I'd like you to do right now, we're just going to sit for a few minutes, and then I'm just going to ask you some questions. And in this kind of meditation, the question is more valuable than the answer. So when I ask you these questions, or when I pose these questions, you are quite likely, and it's my intention, to experience some kind of shift. And when you experience that shift, I just want you to rest in the shift. You don't actually have to think about the question, but actually just experience that shift. Thoughts and ideas may come to mind, and that's fine. And if you get completely lost in things, then just come back to your breath, establish a base of attention again, and then pick up the question. None of these are going to be particularly probing or, from a psychological point of view, these aren't emotionally revealing or churning stuff up. This is much more an exploration into this question, who am I? So let's start by sitting together in meditation. And we'll just let the breath rest, rest with the experience of breathing. Sandy, do you have any questions? Was the meditation instruction I gave to you okay?
I felt okay.
Good. Just wanted to check.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay. So just take a few minutes. And Steve, since we don't want long periods of silence on this, I will cue you just before I'm going to ask a question, so you'll have to keep your eyes on me. Okay. Your attention rest in the experience of breathing. First question is, am I my name? Now, when you ask that, some of you may respond, well, no. But when somebody calls and says, or say, who are you? That's the first thing we say. So just ask the question, am I my name? You may experience a little shift. Just rest in that shift. If you fall into distraction, then come back to the breath. Let the mind, body settle. And then ask the question again. Am I my name? And rest in the shift. Then the next question. Am I my body? Again, when you ask that question, you may experience a shift. Just rest in that shift. Am I my body? If you lose track, fall out of that shift, then settle into the experience of breathing again with mind and body, and then ask again, am I my body? When you do this, lots of other questions may pop into mind, like, well, what am I then, and so forth. Just let those come and go, and rest in the shift. Once you start thinking, you're lost in distraction, so let that all go, come back to the experience of breathing, and then pose the question again. We could also ask the question, am I my feelings? Again, you may experience a shift. Rest in the shift. Am I my feelings? And again, we could ask, am I my thoughts? We have thoughts. Am I my thoughts? Again, if you find yourself mulling a lot of stuff around or thinking things, then just let body and mind settle in the experience of breathing. This kind of practice needs to be done from some sense of stability. It's not a conceptual exercise. Through these questions, of course, we're leading up to a slightly bigger question. Am I what I experience? This includes the thoughts, feelings, sensations that arise. That covers everything we experience. Am I what I experience? Now, when you ask this question, there may be an answer no, there may be an answer yes. But that's not what we're looking for at this point. Not an answer. There's a shift when we ask this question. Am I what I experience? Rest in the shift. Okay, let's hear from you about your experience with this. Some of you may find this a little challenging. What happened? The floor is open. Sandy, do you want to start?
It was very strange to describe, so I guess
it can be also a little difficult to describe.
Yes, I found that that when I gained my focus on my breath, I sort of had this almost like a blue screen in front.
Not the blue screen of death.
Not, I'm hoping not, although one never knows. And then it was almost as if very, very dark, gravelly clouds or whatever would keep kind of rolling into this blue screen, if this makes sense, when my mind would wander.
Okay.
And so I would find that I would keep coming back to the breath, and they would sort of come and go and sometimes be more sparse than others. And they seem to come and go fairly quickly in the beginning of your questions. And I found that when you asked the last question, they seem to keep kind of coming in.
Okay.
And I never quite cleared that screen, if that experience makes sense at all.
What was your experience in your body?
Well, I guess that was strange. My body felt surprisingly at ease.
Okay.
And for example, when you asked, are you your body?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the health and fitness
yes.
business with Joe. So often it is, or not, about me being my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I expected a very uncomfortable shift in my body, in a way, when we were talking about some of the things you would ask. And I was surprised that I actually felt as comfortable as I did.
All right. Anybody? Thank you very much. Randy.
I had a good stability with the breath, and then you started asking questions and blew it all.
That's what happens with these questions.
The shift literally was to move out of connecting with my breath to go looking for the answer. When you ask,
you aren't a researcher by any chance, are you?
When I'm, am I my thoughts? I went looking at my thoughts and evaluating them and deciding, no, I'm not my thoughts. No, I'm not my emotions. I'm not my body. And then I got into a regression where I started wondering what it was that was actually looking at my thoughts, and which I do that frequently.
Yes, this is
the shift
meditation
is
equivalent of a dog chasing its own
yeah,
tail.
Yeah, yeah, standing between two mirrors.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a cat chasing its own tail.
Yeah.
Cat person. It felt almost like a physical movement. Something, the I-ness, the consciousness, the self-awareness made a shift, and it was notable.
Okay. Can you describe that shift?
Well, for me, it was definitely a movement out of being with to starting to try and act on. I was using my mind as opposed to just being present with my breath.
So when the question was posed, you started using your mind.
Yeah. And it felt like a movement out of and away from my core self.
What I'd like you to, I'm going to take some other responses while I'm doing so. What I'd like you to just experiment with, and it won't be ideal because there'll be some talking going on, is what if you ask the question and you don't start using your mind?
Got to work on that.
Yes, that's what I'd like you to do, and I'll come back to you. Okay. Kara.
I have more of a question than an experience. Isn't the great thing about being a person our ability to cultivate or not just cultivate, but to have self-awareness? Isn't that what separates us from everything else on the planet? The fact that we can actually say, like, We don't just act on instinct alone.
Well, well, exactly. Joe says two-edged sword. I would say it is the ability to reflect on experience that creates the possibility of being separate from experience. Because now we can live in a story. And we're going to go into that more in a few minutes. Okay. What were some other experiences with the shift? Sue?
The first question, am I my name? I felt kind of a shift in that I immediately thought, what is my name? And that I have some energy about that. Almost like, don't pin me down.
Yes.
And that has been an experience I've had with some people in my family who call me by a name I was when I was a little girl, and people call me by my name now, and all this started going on.
So there are all kinds of associations with various names.
And it was this, like, don't put me in one spot because I'm more than that or something.
Okay. Roxanne.
When you asked the questions, I answered them immediately with a no. You know, am I my name?
Like that.
Yep. No, obviously that, you know, that doesn't feel like it sums it up in my body. That doesn't sum it. I kind of didn't get stuck in the question. And with each question you asked, I was able to let go of that thing that you asked if that's who I was. And it kind of put me in a very fuzzy place.
Fuzzy.
I almost couldn't tell was if I, you know, sometimes in when I'm meditating, if I start to kind of fall asleep a little, that, you know, that kind of feeling, but it didn't feel like falling asleep. It just, you know, I just kept kind of shedding the different things that you were asking if that's who I am. And it kind of, I felt like I let go of my thoughts more.
Okay.
With those questions.
Okay. Yep. Okay. A couple of other people. Francis and Nancy.
In my case, the response I had was negative and positive to the, depending on what it was. So with regards to like feelings and emotions, my immediate reaction was no, but it was one of anxiety and fear that I hope to God people don't like paint me as my own feelings are, because that would be just terrible. And then when when you said thoughts, that's okay to me. So, but for in my case, it's like my stomach is like my indicator of anxiety. So my stomach clenches when I'm anxious or afraid, and so my stomach went back and forth from clenching to like letting go, depending on whether I thought it was okay if people. I would think I was actually thinking more of how people. If I am my feelings, that's how people see me. And I guess I was thinking that.
So you're bouncing all over the place here because on the one hand, you're disidentifying with these various things, and then you're very concerned about whether people might be perceiving you in terms of these various things.
Right.
Some various physical reactions coming up.
Right.
So a fairly rich experience for you.
And actually, just in terms of when you ask, are you your name, an interesting exercise I did in one of my other classes was the instructor asked us to say our full name and then explain where the name came from. So and there was a lot of people from different parts of the world. So, for example, my name is, the full name, it's Frances Mary Cecilia Barry. And it comes from, you know, Barry being Irish, Mary being, you know, the Catholic name, and then Cecilia, which is the patron saint of music. So I took that because I like music. But you realize there was a whole story that everybody told in their actual name. And when they thought about it, you know, my mother calls me Fran, which drives me insane. Like, you know, so it's sort of, you know, if each person spoke 5 minutes about their name, you actually learned a lot about, you know, their background and their family.
And it goes back to what we were doing earlier this morning. Lots of stories connected with this. Nancy, there's a microphone right here.
Thank you. I was surprised when I asked about my name that there didn't seem to be much shift. And I had a few thoughts about it, like at one point in my life I had a different name and now I have my maiden name, which, you know, I've had most of my life. and that seemed pretty stable. The other questions, though, when I asked them, it's as though kind of everything drops away, and there's just kind of space.
Mm-hmm. Everything drops away?
No.
Okay. Well, that's where we're going to go now.
This is from Jeff in Colorado. What does evolution hang upon? What does karma hang upon? Who, what wakes up? Who, what makes the effort?
What does evolution or karma hang upon? What wakes up? Who, what makes the effort? And there's a rather graphic image which is sometimes invoked when people ask this question, these kinds of questions. When you have an arrow in your eye, you generally don't ask who shot it. The kinds of questions that you pose here come from standing back and looking and trying to understand practice or Buddhism or karma or evolution. You can't really understand this. I mean, you can come to a conceptual understanding, but it has the relationship to chocolate ice cream that a description of chocolate ice cream has. You know, you can read about it, but you don't actually taste it. If these are questions that are really burning in you, then let them burn. Don't try to find the answers. Let the questions burn in you until you are burned up, basically. That is very much how the Zen tradition would approach this. What wakes up? Well, you can translate that question or put it in different forms. What dies? Or you can make it very simple. When you look at a book or a flower, what experiences looking at a book or looking at a flower? What experiences the flower? The answer to these questions is not an explanation or a description. When you look in this way, you'll experience a shift in attention. And as you are able to rest in that shift, you'll find a way of knowing that you may not know at this point, a way of knowing opening up to you, in which the kinds of questions that you're asking look very, very different. I don't really want to go any further at this point because to do so runs the risk of confusing stirring the waters in a way which will not be helpful to you. Take any of these questions, let it burn deeply inside. Don't look for a cognitive or intellectual or conceptual answer. Rather, rest in the shift that any of these questions produces and see what happens there.
I'm Joe in Los Angeles. We're working our way through Red Pine's translation of the Diamond Sutra, as you know, and in the commentary, he continually returns to the phrase, the birthlessness of all dharmas. And he suggests that the experience and acceptance of that is the mother of Buddhas and the essential teaching of the perfection of wisdom. And also he suggests that it's a trauma that one must be capable of enduring. He emphasized that it can't be approached as a concept, which I know I'm doing right now, but it must be experienced. But that particular verbal construction, especially when it's expanded to the forbearance of the birthlessness of all dharmas, it always hits me. It seems to hold some kernel of some sort that continually eludes me. Now, I do realize that that's exactly where I should stop, where my mind stops. But I'd still like to hear you talk around the subject with particular attention to trauma and forbearance.
Well, the aim of Buddhism is to be able to experience whatever arises. And you know from your practice that in order to do that, one has to cultivate attention. So that when something arises, we aren't thrown into distraction and are unable to experience it. Another way of describing the aim of Buddhism is to experience things just as they are. It's actually the same thing, but it's a different way of describing it. Now, if I ask you the question, what are you? What happens?
I stop right before I try to categorize. Mm-hmm.
And what do you experience in that stopping?
I could say everything. I mean, I could say, you know.
Well, I think there are three or four things that happen fairly quickly. Usually when we ask the question, what am I? There's an immediate moment of looking. And we see absolutely nothing. And then we panic. And we fall into confusion and start thinking. That sound right to you?
Yeah.
Okay. So we aren't able to stay in that experience of looking at nothing. And if we go further, we aren't able to stay in the experience of being no thing. And this is what Red Pine is referring to. The experience of being no thing is the birthlessness of all dharmas. It is the mother of Buddhas. It is the essential teaching of the perfection of wisdom. And because it contradicts so many of the assumptions that have been conditioned into us, it can be and is traumatic, or for many, it can be traumatic. Which is why we need a high level of attention to be able to experience it. Otherwise, we freak out or we panic or something like that and fall into confusion. So, one can use words like forbearance, but it isn't a case of saying, I'm just going to, we usually think of that as a kind of grin and bear it approach. It's not like that. We're either able to stay in the experience or we fall out of it. Pretty quickly. There is the how do we live after we've had that kind of experience, because we think, well, it really changes how we see and understand what the world is and what we are. And there's an element of forbearance and patience there. But it's primarily a case of building the capacity in attention so that we experience things as they are. And one aspect of that is we are not the thing that we ordinarily think that we are. And experiencing that can be both a shock and a freedom at the same time.
So I can understand forbearance as patience.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear birthlessness of all dharmas as the experience of being no thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I needn't pay that much attention to this verbal formulation, birthlessness of dharmas. I get hung up in that.
How do you get hung up in that? See, dharmas here means experience. So where does experience come from? That is the birthlessness of all dharmas. That's all. You are looking right at it. That's where we start. As your capacity and attention increases, then you not only can look at it, you can actually be right in it, and that's experiencing it.
So I don't need to create a whole new category for birthlessness.
No, you don't. And it's also not necessary. In fact, it's not very useful to try to understand this. It's far more important to know it.
Yeah. Thank you. Here's a question from Patrick in Montreal. It seems to me that there is nothing to really know. Therefore, if one is not knowing, is there no end to the I that seeks to know itself? Is there a practice that allows for a greater settling within this?
Here it seems to me that you've allowed words to confuse you. Your first sentence, it seems to me that there is nothing to really know. Well, that's not true. Many people over the centuries have poured a great deal of effort and time and energy into coming to know the mystery of being, the mystery of life, whatever you want to call it. It cannot be understood intellectually, but it can be known experientially. And if we go back to Buddha Shakyamuni, for instance, he wanted to know where suffering came from. Why is there suffering? And he came to an experiential understanding of that, an experiential knowing that suffering comes from the avoidance of the experience that we don't exist in the way that we think we do. And that when we know how we actually are, then suffering ceases. So, is there no end to the I that seeks to know itself? Here it sounds like you're tying yourself up in logical knots. I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to do to untie you. You may be wound up pretty tight. What I suggest you do is that you let go of those conceptual formulations and you rest in. You begin by resting in the experience of breathing. If you can just actually rest there for a while, and for a while I mean like a few minutes, you can just rest comfortably experiencing yourself breathing, then maybe ask yourself the question, what experience is this? What experience is this resting? Now, don't try to come up with an answer to that question, because the function of the question is to help you see or know a little deeper.
if you're resting in the experience of breathing, and you're really resting, and then you ask yourself this question, you're likely to experience a shift. You may even experience it physically. And now rest in that shift. And if you're able to rest in that shift and do this over a number of times, then you can do the same thing. What experience is this? And this is going to lead you into a deeper and deeper experience of what you are. So that's the practice that may allow for a greater settling in this.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.